coming up.
They found these IV bags basically come in an outer bag, and they found that there had been this tiny hole basically poked into it where one would assume that he's injecting these substances.
For Vault Studios, I'm Reed Redmond. You're listening to The Daily Crime.
We're at our most vulnerable during surgery. To think that it's not safe and you're even more vulnerable than you imagined is scary.
On August 24th, officials at a North Dallas hospital say they became aware of IV bags that had been tainted at their facility. Investigators now say the bags had been tampered with on purpose, causing one death and a number of other cardiac emergencies.
Investigators say multiple patients suffered medical emergencies after what were supposed to be routine surgeries.
All the clients that we represent seem to have the exact same story.
They're young, in good health, no underlying conditions, undergoing what were supposed to be single-day routine procedures here.
They found themselves being rushed to a major hospital because they had to be intubated and ventilated because they suffered respiratory distress and cardiac arrest.
Dr. Reynaldo Ortiz now stands accused of tampering with the IV bags. An investigator at a recent hearing called him a medical terrorist.
A newly unsealed complaint accuses Dr. Reynaldo Ortiz Jr., an anesthesiologist, of purposely contaminating IV bags with a painkiller.
If you have somebody who tampers with the consumer product and that causes the reckless indifference to human life, and then you have a death, it's up to life in prison.
It is astounding, stunning for any of them to think that someone did this intentionally. And obviously that remains to be seen, but that's what law enforcement's there for, and we're going to cooperate with them to get to the bottom of it.
I know several doctors, anesthesiologists, surgeons, they're all quality people. You can go through your whole life without ever hearing a case like this.
William Joy is joining us today from Dallas, where he's a reporter with local news station WFAA. William, thanks for joining me.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks for having me.
You've been covering the case of a doctor who's now facing federal charges in connection with the death of one of his colleagues. Maybe the best place to start here is to have you tell us a little bit about this doctor's background. Who is Dr. Reynaldo Rivero Ortiz Jr.?
Yeah, so he's an anesthesiologist, and like a lot of anesthesiologists, he's not just working at one hospital. He's working at a lot of these outpatient facilities with Baylor Scott & White, a big health provider here. He'd been doing that for quite a while, and it wasn't until another anesthesiologist, and I'm sure we'll get to it, but it wasn't until another anesthesiologist at his practice died that suddenly there became a lot more scrutiny on him. But once people started to look into his past, they realized, oh, wait, there's actually quite a bit of issues here that have just been kind of festering for a while. But as you mentioned, yeah, now he's facing some very serious charges.
So let's walk through all of that. At the center of this case against Ortiz Jr. is the death, as you mentioned, of another physician, Dr. Melanie Casper. She died back in June, and a source told WFAA that her death was initially thought to have been a heart attack at her home. At what point did we learn that that wasn't actually the case, and what is it that you've learned?
Yeah, so it's basically she went home, and she took an IV bag with her because I guess she was feeling dehydrated, and if you're an anesthesiologist, maybe that's a normal thing to do, but took an IV bag home to treat herself for dehydration. About 10, 15 minutes after she started using it, she suddenly has this cardiac event, right? She goes into cardiac arrest. She gets taken to the hospital and she's pronounced dead. And people at first were like, wow, how did this happen? They thought it was an accident. And they tested the bag and they found bupivacaine, which is a painkiller. And then they were wondering, well, that's odd. How did that get in there? So they then test the other bags at the IV, at the facility where Dr. Ortiz and Dr. Casper were both working. And they found bupivacaine in a lot of these bags. And they started to realize, great, this is a serious problem. In fact, what Dr. Ortiz is accused of doing is putting not just this painkiller, but also lidocaine, another painkiller, and then epinephrine, right, which is adrenaline, in these bags all together. So this combination of painkillers and adrenaline, basically, in these IV bags. And the medical examiner also, once they found that test positive for bupivacaine, that painkiller, is when they changed her death.
I know this is still something of an open question at this point, but what have you been able to figure out as far as how many IV bags were affected, were contaminated?
So here's one of the crazy parts is we actually don't know at this point just how many people may have been impacted by this. Now, the federal complaint, the actual charges when they were unsealed, points to about a dozen cases, and that includes Casper, so 11 other people. And the way they went about this is basically they're looking at since late May, which is when one of the most recent medical board rulings came down against Dr. Ortiz, there were all of a sudden these series of issues at the hospital. So one way they kind of couch this in context is in all of last year, all of 2021, they had 5 incidents where somebody had to be emergency transported to the hospital, right? Because of an issue with their heart during surgery or something else, right? In the month of August alone, they had 5. So they realized, I mean, just from that month alone, there was clearly something going on. We know of a private practice attorneys who are representing some of these clients in a lawsuit. They represent, I think, a dozen people at this point as well. So we think that, you know, some of these other these nurses and doctors who have spoken, if you include other facilities that Ortiz works at, I mean, we could be talking about, who knows, maybe a couple dozen people, if not more. But I think that's still to be figured out. Because remember, these patients, a lot of them aren't entirely sure what happened to them. And I'm sure as lawsuits and the criminal case plays out, we'll have a better understanding of just how many people may have been impacted here.
Begin with breaking news tonight. A North Texas doctor is in custody accused of contaminating IV bags. Investigators believe those compromised IV bags resulted in the death of another doctor and left several patients with severe injuries.
How exactly do investigators say these controlled substances actually got into these IV bags? And how have they tied Ortiz Jr. to it?
This may be the one area, well, it already is, where his defense is really trying to latch on to. So here's what they have so far. So prosecutors in court at his detention hearing actually played video showing Ortiz taking IV bags, putting them into a warmer, and then kind of, well, looking both ways, kind of down a hallway before he did it, then putting it into this warmer where they basically are storing these IV bags and then walking away.
August 4th, prosecutors say this is anesthesiologist Reynaldo Ortiz, IV bag in hand. He looks around, drops the bag in an IV warmer. It's 11:35 a.m. 75 minutes later, prosecutors say a patient treated with an IV bag pulled from the same warmer suffers a serious cardiac episode. Then again on August 19th, 10:34 a.m., just 26 minutes later this time, prosecutors say another patient treated with an IV bag from this warmer suffered a serious cardiac episode.
And so what would happen was the timeline was Ortiz would walk up to this warmer, put in the IV bags, close the door, leave, and then like 15, 20 minutes later, a patient who was being operated on suddenly had one of these cardiac events. And they could just, each time that he did it, they could play it out showing, here's him putting it in the bag, here's the person having an event, here's him putting the bag, and it would just, so it's, you can't tell from the video if the bag being grabbed out of the warmer is the exact same bag that he put in, but the implication is at a certain point, he keeps putting in these bags, and then, you know, 15, 20 minutes later, somebody has an event, they're kind of correlating the two, right? In terms of actually putting the substance in the bag, they found these IV bags basically come in an outer bag, and they found that there had been this tiny hole basically poked into it where one would assume that he's injecting these substances, but this tiny hole poked into these outer bags to get the substance into the IV bags, basically. And again, it's the bupivacaine, lidocaine, and epinephrine are the three substances that he's accused of putting in these IV bags.
William, lay out for us, what are the criminal charges that Ortiz Jr. is facing now?
So they're kind of obscure charges. Even a former federal prosecutor that we talked to said that it's not very common. But basically, it's tampering with a consumer product causing death, right, which is up to life in prison. But it's also intentional drug adulteration, basically tampering with drugs. While it might sound like a rare charge, there's also a big range, right? It can range from anywhere from 3 years to life in prison, as I was just saying. And a lot of that has to do with intent. Again, I'm not an attorney, but the former federal prosecutors that we've spoken to on this mentioned, A, that this is rare, that like the closest thing they could think of was the Tylenol poisonings back in the 80s. The other thing that they mentioned is intent matters a lot here.
You've got one where people are really just trying to mess with a business. or they're trying to negatively impact a business. They're not trying to hurt anybody. And that's where you see kind of the three-year statute kick in.
If your goal was to say, just mess with a business, that might be one thing and something happens unintentionally. If your goal was to actually harm people, then that's a totally different intent. So I think that's one thing that we'll be interested to see how this plays out as well. It's also interesting to note when you look at the charges, the actual criminal complaint unsealed, one thing that they point out is that this never happened to Ortiz's patients, right? So this kept happening to other people's patients after he kind of got frustrated at his job. Is the way the picture that prosecutors paint is he's getting frustrated with other employees, with management, with the medical board. And so all of a sudden he's making this situation where it looks like, you know, other doctors are bad doctors, or maybe his goal was to harm people. That's something that's really going to have to be played out in court.
And that first charge you mentioned is a homicide charge. Presumably that's connected to the death of Dr. Melanie Casper?
Correct. Absolutely. Yes. So her death is the one that's really the linchpin of this whole thing. And frankly, had she not died, who knows how long this would have gone on? Because again, these incidents date back to around May. So that's something that is, you know, could have kept going on these patients really suffering near-death experiences. I mean, I'm talking about people's hearts stopping and being emergency rushed to the hospital. Who knows how long it could have gone on. But yes, the linchpin of the case is really around her death.
In addition to Ortiz Jr. facing criminal charges, the Texas Medical Board held a hearing to determine whether or not his license to practice medicine should be suspended. What was the outcome of that hearing?
So right now, his license is suspended, and it wasn't just the one incident. If you go back, one of the other things that's outlined, and we kind of knew going into this, just looking at medical board records, is he's been disciplined twice and was going on a third time, and that's independent of this issue. So one of his issues was that he had failed to report a conviction for shooting his neighbor's dog with a pellet gun. And then failed to report that conviction. There were two similar incidents, one that was already public record and one that was working its way through the system, but they're both similar and involve him basically not providing proper care, CPR really, to patients who needed air. So one of those cases he had already received an issue for, like a warning. The other one, he was still being worked through the system and had not been public record yet until the criminal complaint was unsealed. But yes, his license was suspended after this kind of threat played out. It was like a sudden emergency meeting, basically, of the Texas Medical Board.
Before I let you go, I want to ask, what have you and your colleagues at WFAA heard from the family of Dr. Melanie Casper?
So her family has been rather quiet throughout this entire thing. Her husband was in court on Monday for the detention hearing. We should probably note that the Dr. Ortiz is going to have to stay in detention. He's not, you know, released. He was actually discovered with a lot of cash, thousands of dollars on him and lidocaine when he was arrested without incident. But her husband, Dr. Casper's husband, again, has been quiet throughout this entire thing, has said things like, if he's accused of doing what he, you know, allegedly, or if he did what he's accused of doing, then he's not a very good doctor. And, you know, my wife was a good doctor.
It's just been a difficult summer. This new information just stirs up all the emotions I'll ever get. So it's a lot to take in.
What would you like people to know about your wife?
She was a quality anesthesiologist, and to see the, you know, accusations against another anesthesiologist is, that's this terrible, it's hard to comprehend.
You wanted to meet her today. Why?
Well, I've never seen the man, and if, you know, if he's guilty of what he's being accused of, then, you know, I wanted to see who he was.
What do you want to say to him?
Oh, I've got nothing to say to him. If he's guilty of these things, he's not worthy of my comments.
It's been kind of reserved, I would say, so far. But I can tell you from our sources and talking to the medical community through this story, kind of on background calls and speaking with people, this is definitely something that a lot of medical professionals in our area are paying very close attention to.
William Joy with WFA in Dallas. Thanks for sharing the story.
Thanks so much.
And thank you for listening to this episode of The Daily Crime. We're here with a new one every day of the week, Monday through Friday. So make sure you're subscribed to or following the podcast wherever it is you're listening right now. If you're trying to figure out what to listen to next, you can head over to vaultstudios.com for a full list of our shows. That includes our weekly podcast, True Crime Chronicles, also co-hosted by me and Will Johnson. That'll do for this one. Until next time, for Vault Studios, I'm Reed Redmond.